You're listening to the Sound of Football podcast, a ride on the football fairground.
It's a very warm welcome to you all. Happy New Year to you all. This is Chris Oakley once again on the Sound of Football. Back for another calendar year of football chat. Of course, I can't do this on my own. As I always say, I need, in a big way, Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley. Hello, Terry and Graham.
Hello.
In a big way.
In a big way. Yeah, otherwise it's just me talking to myself.
Oh, I see.
And, what, and people
like
listening
in
voyeuristically. yes, you noticed.
The podcast went very well last week, didn't it?
Yeah, because it's
basically
me and you there, did it?
Damn right.
But by way of balance, I think you talked plenty enough during the course of 2010 to kind of, yeah, no, anyway.
This cannot be denied.
Yeah, well, there you go. Anyway, yes, hope you enjoyed the best of last week. We're back now for some three-way chat. And, well, we're talking, as ever, about recent events, namely the third round of the FA Cup, which was going on during the course of the weekend just past. Another eventful third round, and, well, plenty to discuss. Let's plunge straight in. I don't know which match we'll go for first. I think we'll kick off with the big one, really. There's no doubt about it. Manchester United against Liverpool. And much hoo-ha in the lead-up to this game, namely surrounding the arrival once again of the Messiah, Kenny Dalglish, back to fill the still warm boots of Roy Hodgson, who's given the chop only a matter of, what, a day or two beforehand. Unfortunately, the return of Kenny Dalglish wasn't enough to get Liverpool through to the next round. Were either of you too surprised by this, or did you think that maybe Dalglish might be able to instil some instant kind of inspiration and set them on their winning ways again?
I wasn't, because Liverpool aren't that good.
Nor me. No. I thought that Liverpool weren't that good, and I didn't think that just because Dalglish had arrived that they would be significantly better. Maybe if they were playing another team, but Manchester United are really good, so I think it would have been tough for them to have risen. I think they showed a little bit more spirit. My boss is a Liverpool fan. He was quite pleased with the way that they played. I don't know why, but he was. and so I suppose in that respect, there's some encouragement to be drawn from it. But they didn't look appreciably any better than they were under Roy Hodgson, which is hardly surprising because he'd only gone like a couple of days beforehand, and Dalglish had been in Bahrain from 24 hours before the game. So I'm not quite certain. I think Dalglish was just there really because I think he wanted to demonstrate that he wasn't shying away from what would almost certainly have been a difficult fixture. I think he sort of wanted to make a statement to say, look, I'm here and, you know, I'm serious and so I'm going to come along. But he could conceivably have got away with sitting in the stands and looking down at Sammy Lee bawling his nuts off while Liverpool were losing. So.
Yes. I'm just wondering, because he's been put in post until the end of the season. Do either of us, do any of us think he'll be there at the end of the season? Or do you think that there will be kind of events leading up to that, like Kenny Dalglish thinking, to hell with this, think I made a big mistake, or that maybe they'll make another sacking and get someone else in?
No, I think they'll keep him there. I think the Liverpool, you know, I don't know what the intention of the owners is with Dalglish, whether they put him in and said, you've really got to get us to a Champions League spot, or they've just said to him, for God's sake, make sure we're just top half and that's it. I think if they've tried to give him anything to say, okay, you've got to finish top four, I think that's really a long stretch for them, because you know they are a long way behind now and they're not in the best frame. So.
There's talk, actually, as I speak, on at least on the BBC website, that he's being considered for the permanent job.
Well, he wants the permanent job. I think his target is to get Anfield full again, because I think a number of fans have been staying away with Hodgson there. I think that he's there to reunite the fans, the supporters with the club, and get the turnstiles whirring again. And I think if he can do that, then everyone will just see where everyone is at the end of the season. I assume that Liverpool will probably be somewhere mid-table. Maybe if they have a really good run, they'll push on to maybe top six, top seven, perhaps. I don't think he's completely beyond the realms of possibility. Although looking at them play, it is. But, you know, if you want to be, you know, charitable, And then see where they are from there. But I think he wants the job. He wants the job full time. Again, had a conversation with my Liverpool supporting boss, who said that going back to when he left Liverpool, the situation was that he was under a great deal of pressure and stress. And was pretty miserable with, you know, what was perceived as a slight decline in the team's ability. The squad was ageing. Obviously, the whole Hillsborough thing had affected him very deeply, and he wants to break. He didn't actually want to go. He wants to break. He wanted, I don't know whether or not this is common knowledge, so forgive me if it is, but he wanted someone to step in, look after the shop for about 6 months or so, and then he would come back refreshed and recharged and ready to have another go. And obviously that's not what happened, as we all know. So I think that he probably feels that there's unfinished business, and maybe this is his opportunity to get in there and do that, which I was quite intrigued to learn.
Of course, the ironic thing is that you know, for all the criticism that Roy Hodgson got, one could claim that he never got the chance to open that transfer window and maybe bring some new players in. And so presumably Kenny Dalglish will. Do you think he'll have a good eye for the sorts of players that are needed? Because I guess the last time he was in charge of Liverpool, it was a completely different sort of footballing environment, wasn't it, really? Footballing landscape. It wasn't sort of like now, where you splash the money left, right and centre. So one could argue that maybe he hasn't got the sort of experience in throwing money around. How do you think he'll fare with that, where that's concerned, Graham?
Well, it's difficult to say, really. I mean, because you've got to look at where Liverpool are, and, you know, anyone with any sort of sense of acumen would be doubling the price of any players that Liverpool will be going for, because, like, they'll be seen as being desperate. And where are they going to go for style players? It seems very, very strange. I mean, they haven't been able to get any really decent talent into the squad for a little while now. And the players they have got don't seem to be improving any. You know, I think, you know, it comes to something when Dirk Kuyt's probably your most consistent player in the team, and I think, you know, that's the problem they've got at the moment. And obviously they've got the fact that Torres, you know, something is definitely up with him. He's not the player he was, and you know, what do you do? I mean, like do you buy in more? Do you buy in replacement for players who are just off at the moment? When, you know, they could instantly come back again, or do you basically say, right, okay, well, cash in on this guy if you can, and then spend the money on other decent players. And see what you can get. It's a very, very difficult thing to call, and there's no, you know, you've got no record there of Dalglish doing that over the last 20 years, because, you know, he hasn't been doing that. So
just hasn't been there.
Yeah, I mean, like the last time he had a hugely open wallet. It was when he was at Blackburn. But times have certainly changed since then. So.
Yeah, I mean, at Blackburn, he could sign whoever he wanted.
Yeah, anyone else wanted.
Yeah, well, I mean, he famously signed Duncan Shearer, didn't he, and played him in the reserves to all intents and purposes, and he was, because he just happened to be playing for Swindon at the time, who were Blackburn's promotion rivals that season. So he could sign anybody he wanted. So you didn't, to an extent, you didn't really need a good scouting network. You know, you just sort of like said, well, who do I fancy? And said, well, him. And, I suspect that Liverpool may well, I wouldn't be surprised if they signed no one. They might sign another left back to replace a full back to replace Konchesky, but because he's clearly out of it, he's been dropped.
Yes.
But I mean, apart from that, I think they might keep their powder dry and see and just muddle through until the end of the season.
Well, he's certainly got a job on his hands, isn't he, in terms of trying to sort of squeeze a bit more sort of quality out of the players that he's got. But one thing that I heard on the radio during the course of last week, Laurie Sanchez, I don't know if you heard this, Laurie Sanchez on BBC Radio 5 Live, the latest in a long line of people queuing up to basically say Liverpool are not a big club, and of course predictably got a lot of flack from the public who were queuing up to ring in and tell him that he was wrong. And it's a bit of an old chestnut, but on that particular matter, where do you both stand on it? Do you think Liverpool are a big club? I think, just on account of the attendances, really, and obviously just the history, that they are still a big club as such. I mean, they've not won perhaps as many trophies in recent years as your Man U's and Chelsea's and Arsenal's or whatever, but a Champions League win in whatever it was, 2005, I think it was, got to a final not long after that. I think it's bit sort of off target, off the mark, shall we say, for Sanchez and his ilk to be saying Liverpool aren't a big club. Do you agree?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, do I agree that he was off the mark? Yes, I do think he was off the mark there, because I think Liverpool are still a big club because they can still turn heads in the transfer market. I mean, if Liverpool are after players, then there is I don't think you need to really convince a player, an average player, too much for them to go there. It's not like they're another club in the Northwest, like another Premier League club, like say Blackburn, for instance. It's not they're not going to have the same cash when Liverpool go on the prowl looking for talent. So, which that sounded very, very suspect, didn't it?
Wouldn't be the first time something like that's come from you.
But extraordinary, extraordinarily high support internationally.
Yes,
they're a huge club because they've got a massive global support, of which we've discussed this on the podcast of which the Premier League relies to a large extent.
And
Liverpool are a huge club.
International support that clubs like Chelsea and Man City are incredibly jealous of.
Indeed,
And I would say, that's the difference between these clubs. I mean, remember that, Liverpool was a member of the G14 when Chelsea wasn't, because it had that international cachet, and it still has that, and it's going to take quite a lot for them to lose that.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if they do turn it around and build that whopping great stadium, get back on track, then there's nothing at Liverpool that can't be resolved relatively quickly in a relatively short period of time, over a course of a few seasons.
Yes, absolutely. So that's Liverpool. Yesterday, Sunday, as we speak, we had Chelsea beating Ipswich 7-0, somewhat of a cathartic release, I think, for Carlo Ancelotti's side. A decent result after a long run of bad ones. Terry, do you think that's going to be the sort of impetus for better things to come now, or have they still got quite a bit of work to do in terms of getting back to where they were nearer the start of the season, form-wise?
Well, I didn't see the game, I'm afraid. I wasn't going to see the goals. I think Chelsea's problems up to that result, it seemed to be on a very, very good, experienced but thin squad, where you've had a number of key players who are not performing for whatever reason. So, Drogba for whatever reason, and Terry, I think, in my opinion, has been in something of a decline anyway for some time, and he's not going well. Lampard's obviously struggling with injury as well, and also guys like Anelka and Malouda, who when things are going well show up, but not so well. They don't show up that much, and they don't play that well. I think the result yesterday may also have a great deal to do with Ipswich. That's a team of mainstay Roy Keane signings who probably have known him since, some of whom will have known him since they were youngsters when he was at United, and signed by him for Sunderland. Probably a very, very tight-knit squad who had a lot of faith in the manager, who's been sacked. And it may well be that they just didn't bother. I don't know whether they were sending a message to Marcus Evans or whatever. I think there's two plots going on with that particular result. one for Chelsea, and we don't know with Chelsea. There's no way of knowing. I suspect not. I suspect that it's probably more to do with Ipswich than it is to do with Chelsea. And I think Chelsea are in decline this season, and maybe permanently if Mr. Abramovich doesn't put his finger out and start spending some money and strengthening that squad. My personal feeling is he won't. I think that he's done with Chelsea to an extent. I'm not saying he's going to walk away from the club, but I'm saying he's done with spending money. I think he's got his new toy. He's got a big fat Russian World Cup that needs to be paid for. And he's going to put all his energy into that. And I think that Chelsea will be sort of a little bit like a sort of forgotten toy, you know.
So, in terms of the recent crisis and everything, Graham, I mean, we had, there was, I think somebody on, I can't remember who it was, somebody on Twitter referred to it as the Night of the Long Knives.
It was a two-footed tackle. It was our own
two-footed tackle. It was our own Christian. I do apologise. I see so many Twitter messages, it's easy to forget these details. But, so you had sort of Carlo Ancelotti supposedly in trouble. You had Avram Grant in trouble, Roy Hodgson. I mean, all of those, I mean, Carlo Ancelotti, is he seriously, you know, likely to lose his job over this, Graham? I mean, he certainly did a good enough job up to that point. Okay, he's got a good, you know, flattering, shall we say, win against Ipswich. What can he do with the resources he's got? Because you quite rightly pointed out at the start of the season, before the season even started, that the squad looked suspiciously thin, and now your words are coming true. So can he squeeze much more out of this squad?
Well, it doesn't look it, does it, really? I mean, the thing that it shows with the fact that you know, he's consistently playing Ferreira at fullback, who is struggling there. And this is obviously like you know, I think this is where the problems for Chelsea really are, is in defence. They don't trust their defence. Mm. They haven't really settled on a partnership at the back, so they've ended up having two holding players in front of there. When they can put two holding players in front of them, and it just looks very, very, very dodgy at the back there. It doesn't look
no balance, Graham. No balance in the formation. Is that what you reckon?
Well, I think so. Yeah, I think, or else there is just there's not a lot of confidence in the defence, and when there's not a lot of confidence in the defence, the midfield can't push up, and as well, there's not a lot of confidence in the attack as well. I think at the moment with Drogba misfiring, and I think he's such a big figure up front that everyone's got to look at him and say, well, you know, yeah, if. You can probably imagine, I mean, I don't know, I haven't been to Stamford Bridge this season, but I wonder what things are like when it gets to half-time and they haven't scored. Or what the tension must be like in the ground there, because after recent performances, it must be pretty tense there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, you don't get too much kind of out-and-out sort of booing and stuff, but then again, it doesn't sound like the happiest place in the world either, I don't think.
No. I mean, it's interesting about that defence, Graham, because you're talking about, you know, the bigger players who usually are there to drag Chelsea through some difficult times, having trouble. Of course, Carvalho's gone, you know. And he was an immense player, and in many people's eyes, and I'd have to say, including my own, sort of, you know, helped John Terry out perhaps a lot more than, you know, some of his bigger fans would care to admit. And I think that perhaps Chelsea are really paying for that. Again, those problems at the back. But also, you're absolutely right about Ferreira. That's a really good idea. And I don't think the goalkeeper's that happy either. I mean, they're just generally just not a happy bunch. But, you know, a 7-0 win, you know, can get you a lot of kudos and get you a bit of an extension. So maybe I my personal view is I don't think Ancelotti will be sacked, because, again, going back to my previous argument, that I think Abramovich isn't sufficiently fussed to sack him. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And our previous discussion, of course, in an earlier podcast, which is who do you replace him with? And it's not always...
Exactly. I mean, who do you replace? He's Carlo Ancelotti. He's one of the best club managers in the world.
Exactly.
Who
on earth do you replace him with? And as well, you know, if you are going to get a replacement, it's going to have to be someone who's going to say, right, OK, I want X, Y and Z for when I come in here. And there's now I can't be bothered to give you X hundreds of millions of pounds to go and buy a new squad.
Quite.
In other news, a little mention, albeit a guarded one. I know we have a certain Newcastle United supporting listener of ours, Canadian Geordie, won't have been pleased to see his side losing 3-1 at Stevenage. If it's any consolation, Stevenage looked bloody good, if you don't mind my saying. I saw that match on ESPN, and they were an absolute credit to the level that they play at. They really sort of took the game to Newcastle. And
I did like ESPN's coverage at the weekend, especially the tiny table they would put by the corner flag for their punditry.
Yes, that's right.
It was like the card table at Christmas, wasn't it?
It's like a little horse box, and because you can see it from the pitch when the camera sometimes drifts over to it, and it's got a blind. You have to pull the blind down, and it's got a big ESPN thing, which I'm sure probably contravenes an Ofcom ruling about advertising on TV screens, actually, because it actually looks quite big on the screen. Anyway, they have to open it up, and it's got quite a little thing they've got going on. It's very similar to how they do their American sports, the college football. Have this similar thing, only much flashier and much more, the bigger budget. And they do a similar thing with their rugby coverage, ESPN. They obviously like that whole, putting these things out, particularly with rugby. They put it in front of out the front of the stadium so that supporters can walk by. But obviously, being rugby supporters, are all terribly well behaved. You did that in football supporters, and it'll be V signs and
lobbing cans of drink and stuff.
Yeah, indeed.
But what's quite funny, actually, I know you sort of saw after the match, the Stevenage manager, Graham Wesley. Yes, he sort of finished doing his sort of team post-match chat with his team, and came out and then walked along pitch side, and they had a camera kind of watching him, basically walking behind that little desk, the little ESPN desk in the corner. So and then they switched to the view from the front of the desk. You see him sort of walking behind, like Eric Morecambe used to do at the back of the stage. And he didn't have a great brown overcoat and a suitcase.
See, now that would, I mean, that's just how to improve. For all those hours we spent on this podcast talking about how to improve media coverage, and you've just put it there, Chris.
But the thing was, he was actually walking around to sit at the end of the desk. But for some reason, they decided they were going to track his movements, walking all the way along the perimeter of the pitch. But it was wonderful.
They've done that before. They did that in the last couple of rounds. They did that with the geezer at FC United of Manchester. They did him as well when he was walking across there and shaking hands with various sort of like other people and supporters and stuff like that. It's quite nice. I've been quite enjoying ESPN's coverage of the FA Cup thus far.
That's because Rebecca Lowe's anchoring it, isn't it?
The lovely Rebecca was on as well, yes.
Indeed. Well, it seems a shame to move on, but move on we must. Before we come to you, Graham, with a quick mention of the Arsenal v Leeds match, which finished 1-1, Terry, your team, Crystal Palace, sadly out in the third round. Of course, bit turbulent times, as it were, at the moment, with the manager having gone. How did you see the match with regards to Crystal Palace at the weekend?
Well, I only caught it on Twitter, so I don't have much of an opinion apart from the fact that we lost. We missed a penalty towards the end of the game. Neil Dance scored a belter for a consolation. But another one of our listeners, Captain R.J. Spalding, is a devout fan, and congratulations. Well, sort of congratulations. He did nothing, but congratulations anyway to him for his win, which he thoroughly deserves.
Congratulations for not expending any energy on it.
Indeed. You did a fine job from your sofa there, Rich.
Keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work, yeah. well, for Palace, it's just onwards and upwards, and that all being well, hopefully by the time listeners are listening to this, Eddie Howe will be confirmed as our manager, and I, for one, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with Palace.
Yeah, won't that be good? So, Graham, Arsenal 1, Leeds 1, televised, another live televised game on TV. How much of it was Arsenal being below par and Leeds playing punching above their weight, you might say?
I think both was true in that game. I think Arsenal were wasteful again in front of goal, which was a bit annoying. And Leeds, took their opportunity well. I heard a lot of naysayers about both penalties, really. I think, you know, same given, Chris. I don't have any problems with it. I think that you could probably say it was quite fair. And I think Arsenal will actually struggle when they go up to Elland Road.
Well, that was going to be my next question. You think that could maybe go all the way to penalties or even a defeat?
Could be a Nana skin, couldn't it? Right, anything could happen. It is the cup after all, isn't it, Chris?
It is, and, all hail to the cup, as they say.
How did West Ham get on?
West Ham had a remarkable 2-0 win over Barnsley, which just goes to reinforce this thing about Avram Grant being a wonderful cup manager. West Ham are due to play tomorrow in the first leg of the League Cup semi-final, home to Birmingham, which is rarely chartered territory for West Ham. And here we are again, we're through to the fourth round of the Cup, where we've got Nottingham Forest in the next round, who I would probably put on the same level, really, as Barnsley in terms of,
Easy.
So, Chris,
you would put them on the same level.
come back, Terry. Don't distance yourself so far.
Chris, what do you make of all this stuff that he's been coming out today about the club being destabilised from within and this whole mess with Karen Brady and the...
He sort of said, it was another one of those kind of comedy lines where he sort of said, I don't wish to name any names, but Karen Brady. I think he's sort of getting a bit... He's obviously been sort of sensitivised. I don't know. It becomes sensitive, shall we say, due to his sort of circumstances. And he reckons that he's day-to-day sort of correspondence is generally with Golden Sullivan. He doesn't actually have anything to do very much with Karen Brady, but I suspect he probably won't be in any rush to change that in the near future, because she's sort of written this column in, I don't know what paper it is, one of the tabloids in The Sun, to sort of say that, was it some issue to do with the purchasing players in the transfer window, was it?
She blocked the purchase of Steve Sidwell.
It was a loan signing, wasn't it? It wasn't even a purchase.
I don't know. My belief on this, just very briefly, is that logic, to my mind, dictates that he will be given a chance to at least see his way through to the end of the League Cup campaign before they do anything with him, before they sort of give him the chop or whatever. Mm. Because it would be terribly unfair, I think, to at this stage to sort of say, sorry, off you go, out the door, and a new manager comes in. Oh, no, please don't. and to basically sort of take over at the sort of business end of the whole campaign, and let alone to be able to then take over West Ham when they're still in the FA Cup as well. So I think, you know, if there's any justice, then he'll be allowed to at least see through to the end of the League Cup campaign. But
if that goes all the way through to the final and you're still in the bottom three?
Mm. Yeah, well, that's it. That's what I was just going to say. That would, if they get through to the final, that means he's, in theory, got a lifeline until like March, and exactly, as you say, that could be like, you know, the
curtains.
Noose could be, well, yeah, indeed, noose, curtains, any analogy you like.
It'll be a curtain, a noose made of curtains.
a curtain noose.
That's
right.
A tieback, isn't it?
I'm rendered mute by that. I have no idea. I'll have to Google all that stuff. Finish the podcast without me, guys. I'll be off.
There's a profession in marketing awaiting you, Graham.
Graham, yes.
Graham, Terry, Mark,
yes,
whoever you are.
Yes.
I think let me just check. How long have we got on this podcast?
We've got a couple of minutes.
We've been wrapping up, haven't we, really? So, lots of great results and a few shocks besides. And I'm sure we'll be coming back to the FA Cup in future weeks on the Jolly Old Podcast.
Can I just briefly interject and say that I'm not certain that Burton Albion got enough credit for their performance against Middlesbrough.
Mm.
That is all I have to say on the matter.
Excellent. Well, the podcast would have been less without that comment. Well done.
Less time, anyway.
Right, speaking of which, time we were off. Thank you very much indeed for listening, and I hope you'll join us again for another Sound of Football podcast next week. Don't forget to stick around to hear all their contact details. If you want to drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter or anywhere else, you are strongly urged to do so, and please consider that at your will. But for now, from Terry, from Graham, myself, it's a fond farewell. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Contact the Sound of Football podcast on Twitter at twitter.com/soundoffootball. Alternatively, we have a Facebook page at facebook.com/soundoffootball.